Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a Real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a Real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your Real ID at tsa.gov/realid. That's tsa.gov/realid. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock.
Everybody's doing it. Hello. Hello there, pals. Chris Things, Brian here. I am your pal, your host of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. And this week we're back with a dandy of an episode. We're back with a little match of the week number. Yeah, we're still getting caught up with that. I got another one of my pals in tow, the returning uncle, James Vanderbeek. Good old Uncle Beak coming on the show. My bud Jeremy. It's been a hot minute. I didn't actually realize, but as we will discuss, it's been like 6 months or more since he's been on last. Don't know how that happened. Anyhow, we're going to be chatting a couple of matches that I think are a very interesting combo. We've got Sabu versus Joey Janela in the last ever match of Sabu, the retirement match of Sabu, a match that I have a lot of emotions about, and then a match that also involves Sabu. You've got Terry Funk versus the Sheik, the original Sheik, the last time ever these two would have a singles match, I believe, and the Sheik is accompanied by Sabu, and he plays a bit of a lovely part in this match. So I'm very excited to be talking to Uncle Beak about these matches, to be chatting it up with all of you. I think with this show, I still find it kind of weird and fascinating. Like, I kind of, you know, just use this to chat to my pals about wrestling, which I like to do, you know, and a bit of art on the way. And then, and I guess I kind of got to the stage of this thing where I just kind of like don't really focus on the fact that I'm talking to all of the people out there that choose for whatever reason to listen to this thing. I don't know. It's odd. It's strange. I don't get it. In a way, I would like to think that, you know, we're pals. You know, if you voluntarily listen to this thing, I'd like to think we're kind of buds, you know, even if we've never spoken to one another before. We clearly have some things that we have in common and we both appreciate about this weird wrestling thing that's out there. So, yeah. Anyway, there's some dogs barking off in the background. Hopefully that's not too annoying for you. It happens here. Up on the property we've got in the Sunshine Coast hinterland. We live with my partner's sister and her husband and their child. And it's a lot of people, a lot of dogs. So You know, I do my best to try to find a quiet little nook to record this thing, but, you know, everyone's human. Nothing's quite perfect. As we'd find out with the chat with Uncle Beak that is to come. Not to spoil things too much, but that thing was a nightmare to record. So many technical issues. A bunch of stop starts, and yeah, I hope it has come in together in the end to be a fun little auditory experience for you all. But for me right now, I'm just thinking about the nightmare of chopping that thing back together after all of the technical difficulties. It's not easy running a podcast from the other side of the world. You know, I'm down here in Australia. Most of the people I chat to are either, you know, in America or in the UK from time to time. Mexico of late. So it's really a worldwide affair. But anyway, this is a bit where I normally tell you about what I've been going on in my last week. It's not been a tremendous amount. Same as this last week, I've just been working, prepping for these upcoming art exhibitions that I've got coming up in the near future. I've got two on the horizon that I am kind of nervous for. I've basically sort of got through the conceptual stage of creating these artworks, these paintings. I've officially got one underway, so it's a little bit terrifying. I'm a bit under a week and a half out, so it's that really stage where it's just like, get the things done, Chris. I'm also working on an aforementioned mysterious commission project that almost just about at the tail end of. And then, of course, preparing for the upcoming wrestling club evening that I have coming up this Sunday. So if you are in the Brisbane area, please come on down this Sunday evening from 5 p.m. to the Scratch Bar in beautiful Milton. I'm going to be playing a bunch of weird and wonderful wrestling matches. Things that I love, matches that I love, and things where I really get a kick out of providing a good amount of contrast, you know, one match to the other. These things are kind of like my version of an old-fashioned Rob Naylor or Phil Schneider comp tape. You know, I love the idea of popping that VHS in the video player, and you had no idea what it was going to play. It's just one thing to another. It could be the Headhunters. It could be Onita. It could be a Dean Malenko match. It could be the Sheepherders. It could be Manny Fernandez. I'm sorry, Rob Naylor, if you're listening. But that's what I try to do. So in the week leading up to it, that's where I'm putting together my playlist. I'm, you know, going through a variety of different matches from all over the world, from different eras, and just all sorts of different stuff. And one of the things I really love about professional wrestling is that it is eclectic. It's eclectic as all heck. There's so much variety to it if you care to put in the work to look into all the nooks and crannies out there. And it's one of the most rewarding things in the world for doing so. So I look forward to that. I've been watching a bunch of rad stuff lately. So I hope it's going to be a good night. I'm planning on bringing back the trivia, which last time it was a mix between me forgetting, and then once I remembered, it was kind of a bit too late, and also I felt like we had too much wrestling to extend the night by doing trivia as well. So I made kind of a judgment call on that occasion. But this time, I'm going to try to plan out a little bit better. We will have trivia. I haven't decided on the theme yet, but hopefully it'll be a fun one. Really like the kind of deal of going around the room and, you know, really seeing the level of people's wrestling nerddom. I was surprised and delighted, honestly, with all the previous ones we've done, so I look forward to doing that again. But yeah, I have a lot more stuff to compile, a lot of work to do before Sunday, but I got some good kind of like overall picture of the evening, so I hope people dig it. And I'm so sorry again to everyone who might have been waiting out for that newsletter. You can sign up to my newsletter on the contact page of christhings.com.au. And there is, in theory, a newsletter that goes like once a month where I'll send my latest artwork and you know, a bunch of the playlists with match links to this stuff. But I've been so busy lately, guys. I just haven't got around to it. We're about two out of date now with the wrestling club evenings and those playlists. So I am going to get us caught up. We'll see how I go. I might have to send out one newsletter that has two of these playlists all together. I don't know if anyone's actually going to have time to make their way through it and watch it. But I feel like I need to do it from a completionist standpoint. So I think I will. Now, on to, there's a little precursor to our matches of the week here. In the chat with Jeremy, I don't actually get to go too in-depth on the illustrations this week. And I don't know. I don't know whether, like, this is wrestling art, right? So I don't know whether, like, me talking about the illustrations is something that people like, that people want to hear. So if I don't talk about them necessarily with Jeremy, are people feeling like, I don't know. But I thought I'd have a little chat with you guys about them, about the matches in question, because I quite like this combo. So for this match of the week gimmick, I do my illustrations. So that's what this all started out with. I pick my favorite match that I happen to watch that week, and then I make an illustration of it, and then I talk about it on the podcast. And we've been going for, gosh, these are match of the week's number 84 and 85 today. But yeah, so that match of the week 84, the Sabu versus Joey Janela one, I just happened to watch that match, you know, like the week before the very untimely news that, you know, of Sabu's passing. So I watched it with, you know, this not knowing what would have come. But it was just the weirdest thing where I felt the need to watch that match then and there and to draw it, you know. I think it was the idea of drawing it that really made me want to watch it, because it's such an interesting visual thing. And then I remember I did the illustration and it came together quite quickly in terms of the actual, like, pen to paper part. If you look at this, you can look at all these Match of the Week illustrations on christhings.com.au. It can also be found at instagram.com/christhings. But yeah, sometimes I think the best illustrations or artworks are ones that just come together organically. And this was really that. There's a lot of fun things to play with the textures, with the barbed wire, with the patterns of the wood grain, and, you know, obviously the blood and Sabu's suit. So I had a lot of fun with that. And then I was doing the colouring of it. That actually took so long because of all the different little bits and pieces, the barbed wire, all those things that I just mentioned. So it was one of those ones where, you know, I had fun on the actual pen to paper part, but then the colouring was almost a bit of a nightmare. It was up very late that night, but I got it done, and I'm actually very proud of the illustration now that it's all done and dusted. And I was also wowed that there was a very lovely, supportive customer of mine, follower of mine, that happened to be there on the evening in question with his partner, and they got to witness this match in person, which, you know, so jealous. But then so kindly, you know, bought the print of this match of the week of mine, but also bought the original illustration. So I just want to say a massive thank you out there to you, mystery supporter. You know who you are. But yeah, that really tickled me. And yeah, I really kind of dig it as a bit of a different kind of Match of the Week illustration. You know, I think a cool one. A bit of a darker one than usual. I really wanted to make that pink blood pop. But yeah, I look back on it now and it's like a little bit ominous, I don't know. But I do really love it. And Sabu is a super fascinating face to draw. I had a lot of fun with that. And as I said before, I'm a massive fan of Sabu, and I thought Joey was just fabulous in this too. But yeah, I really enjoyed making the art of that one, actually. And then we got on to the one that became a match of the week from, again, the wrestling club evening. It was the final ever Terry Funk versus the Sheik match, and I really enjoyed this one too. Another one that came together kind of quickly. I picked early moment in the match when they were first, like, before they even got in the ring, actually, where there's a beautiful sky in the background. Sheik starts bleeding so fast. I'll talk about it with Jeremy on the show. Sheik, another guy, so cool. Sheik and Terry, honestly, both great wrestlers to draw. I got a lot of enjoyment out of doing that. And then, on the other hand, colouring this one was just a delight, you know. The colour scheme kind of really came together quite well. I like to play with those kind of blues and pinks and apricots or whatever you'd call them. It kind of felt like I wasn't reinventing the wheel, but it felt like a real Chris Things drawing, if that makes sense. And another one that I'm very proud of, and one that I think celebrates my my love for the weirder side of this, the oddities of professional wrestling, you know. But anyway, that's me talking about the matches. And now I think it is time for me to talk. I mean, that's me talking about the art rather than the matches, gosh. But I will be back quite soon with Jeremy to talk about the matches side of things. Again, if you'd like to support christhings.com.au. All right, over to Chris and Jeremy in the studio. I think we are recording.
Excellent.
Well, without any further ado, I would like to welcome back a friend of the show. I would say my most longest running co-host of the podcasting things.
Yeah.
My dear pal, Mr. Vanderbeek. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's literally been half a year since we've spoken. I noticed that the other day when I looked at Facebook messaging. I'm like, dude, I haven't talked to this motherfucker since December. What is going on? So we had to get on the podcast. Yeah, indeed.
Yes, of course. I was going to say, like, as soon as I heard that, it didn't feel real. I was like, how is that a thing? That also means you haven't spoken to me since I've been in my new house.
Fair.
Which changes the podcasting thing a little bit. I had a bit where there was a lot of bug noises on the show for a while.
I hear a slight breeze now. That's nice. It reminds me of the countryside. But anyway, also I've gone through a lot of shit. I've lost, dude. I lost a girlfriend. So I also lost weight. Somebody today made a joke when I was saying I broke up my girlfriend. Oh no, I said I lost a bunch of weight. They implied it was my girlfriend that I lost, and I found that fairly amusing. But yeah.
You could do the double thing there where you're like, you know, lost all this dead weight in my life.
Yeah, there you go. Deal.
But I mean, that's kind of mean, you know. You don't need to say that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not that mean-spirited, so I just gave the guy a chuckle. Ha-ha. But yeah, that actually was a tremendously good thing for me. It actually really motivated me. I was already trying to get my shit together, and now lost a bunch of weight. I'm in great shape. Well, not great. Much better shape than I was. It's all relative, Chris.
Dude, everything is you're only going by your own, standard. You know, don't compare yourself to anyone else, I always say. So I reckon you're killing it, dude.
I'm better than me yesterday.
Best that any of us can do, I say.
Indeed. And now that I'm single, I've decided to focus on that because I have been pathologically in relationships since I was 19 years old. Like, literally, long-term relationship, breakup for a short period of time alone. Not very long, because I'm very delightful. And then another woman wants to be my girlfriend, and that's thanks, buddy, for an extended period of time. And rinse and repeat, this has occurred. And, yeah, I realize that's probably bad. That's probably not the best thing. So I'm trying to figure out who Jeremy is, or James Vanderbeek, I guess. The man behind the beak. I don't know. I'm really being poignant right now, Chris.
So deep.
Yeah.
If only this was a video recording podcast, people could see your beautiful looking up in off camera.
Yeah, it wasn't even intentional. I was just like, ah, yes. But yeah, also a lot of this reason I'm so tremendous is I got medicated for anxiety, depression, and ADHD. So that has been incredibly beneficial for my life.
Well, dude, that's such a fascinating thing to me, because I saw that you had this as a big thing. And for me, I am a pointedly non-medicated ADHDer. And you know, my brothers, they, you know, that's a big part of their life. You know, they medicated, and that's a thing. So I know it works really well for some people. And for me, it's never been a thing. But yeah, I was interested to talk to you about this.
Yeah, so I have known I have ADHD my entire life. If anyone's ever met me, they know I have ADHD. It's fucking clear as day. But when I was on it as a child, it was pretty rudimentary as far as medication was concerned. And I got all kind of strung out and whacked out as a kid on these drugs. And I always thought bad of them. Like, well, that shit fucked me up worse than I already was. Why would I try to go back to that? But over time, I've realized, dude, my life has been out of control because of my ADHD. I have, like, I don't have object permanence. I'm terrible with money because I don't see, like, I grew up with not very much money, so it's, like, doesn't seem important to me, but it really is. Like, I'm terrible with money, and that has led to, like, relationships ending and shit. So it really has been causing me to not focus on projects. Like, I have tremendous lists of artwork I could do and never get it done. I'll start things, don't get them done. So, yeah, that's been helpful. And then, additionally, I was always terribly depressed and full of anxiety, where I will say, on almost a weekly basis, I thought about I might randomly die suddenly, and it was weighing on me. I have no concern about, like, my mortality per se, but more just like, I literally like, oh, I could die. It was insane, Chris. It was hard to deal with. And I feel so much better now. I'm pretty verbose now. It sucks. I always talk more, but I just rattle off for minutes at the end. I will stop now.
Hey, that is exactly what you want when you chat to someone on a podcast, my friend. So, no, I have no issue.
But no, honestly, it's like, it's been such a positive benefit in my life. It's been noticed by everyone around me. Like, all the people I used to work with, I hardly ever talked to them. And now they talk to me all the time. And they talk about how, man, you seem so confident and full of life. Like, they are inspired by my story about getting into shape and shit. And, like, it's kind of weird. I had, like, a whole class of new trainees that apparently were talking amongst themselves about how cute I was. And another girl, ooh. I know this is weird. I'm not trying to sleep with anyone I work with, to be clear. But they were literally discussing it, apparently. And then one of the girls sat with me. She's like,
wow.
To learn how to do the job. Like, I was job chatting with one of these women. And she goes, when I came over here, the other girl said, you are so lucky to sit with him. He's so cute. And I turned, I jumped up and go, which ones? I wanted to point out which women. But yeah, dude, like, I just opened up more socially. I'm not, like, so awkward. I don't mind talking to people I don't know anymore. Like, before, I would never do that shit. Now, I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. Let's chat. Let's get to know each other. Which is great for my dating life.
Dude, that's fantastic. Can I ask officially how many pounds are we down now?
Over 40.
Man, that's insane.
And, but then I'm also starting to put on... Yeah, because I was, like, around 270 and, like, I've lost and gained, but I'm around 230 now, so about 40 pounds, but I'm starting to get weight because I'm starting to put on muscle.
Nice.
Yeah, so that feels pretty good.
Dude, so good.
In the gym, literally almost every day, Chris, like, dedicated to this shit.
Dude, better man than me.
And the reason why is because I figure if I go every day, if I miss a day, it's not as big a deal, you know what I mean? Whereas opposed to, I have a set 5-day period and then, you know, then I might miss a day. And really the key to all of this is because there's a gym at my work. If there was not, it'd be a lot more difficult. But I just get off work, head downstairs, get my workout done, and head home.
Yeah. Nice, man. I love that.
All right. Power enough about me. Chris, how are things with you?
Man, quite good. I've things have changed a little bit, as I've spoken a little bit on the podcast, with, you know, the new home, the new surrounds, being a hill person now. I live a bit more in the nature, in the sticks, more rather than in the city where I used to live. So it can be a bit on the isolating side, which is why I really like getting to do this podcast and have an excuse to chat to my pals.
I think overall I'm really digging
it, you know, doing a bit more meditation and being around nature and getting to have a dedicated art shed. That's another really nice part.
That's rad. That's very cool. And as far as home renovations or upkeep, are you finding odd jobs to be something you're pretty keen on and easy to do? Or are we calling a gentleman in to fix things?
So a bit of both, you know. Okay. There's certain things, like I think we had to have like our gutters done or something. And I was like, I don't trust myself to not fall off that roof.
Smart.
So in that situation,
call the professional.
There is so much like mowing that has to be done. We have so much grass. It's basically like constantly a battle. So that's something that, we do ourselves. Just
Chris versus the lawn.
Little bits and pieces. Yes, that's always a battle. I'm just like, let's just kill it all. Let's just, you know, replace it with gravel.
Or AstroTurf. Classic AstroTurf.
That'd be cool, but there's a part of it where I don't mind it. You know, you get to do like the chores and feel like a real man.
That's
always nice. Have a beer afterwards. I got a barbecue. Oof. I smoke things now and drink beer whilst doing it. So I'm really embracing.
I used to smoke with you and drink all the time. What are you talking about? Oh, you're smoking about meat. You're smoking meats now. Okay, never mind. You said things. I wasn't sure.
Slightly different type of smoking.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's been good. But just a lot more travel, you know, like living up an hour and a half out of the city and still doing a lot of events and stuff in Brisbane. A lot of long time on the train or driving. But you get used to it. It's okay. Yeah. Can't complain.
Right on, right on. Well, that's cool. Proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, me personally, that's one of the things why I've been trying to focus on getting my money in order, because I, too, would love to own a home. My credit is good now. I have a good 401k, and I just need to save my fucking money, which I've been starting to do pretty good.
Dude, that is so good. I think once you start like having it front of mind, that is the key thing that I hear. So I think you're well on your way. But sounds
yes,
good.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
But, yeah, man, I'm excited to have you back on the show. Excited to talk a little bit of wrestling. But there's travel that I've been saying. I do these wrestling club events where I play a bunch of wrestling from my favorite little bar in Brisbane, The Scratch. And one of these matches that we're discussing today was one that I got to play for a bar full of people that I thought was really fun. A tremendous Terry Funk versus Sheik match. That was quite a hoot for everyone in the bar.
Because if you showed the other one, everyone was like, why are we watching this?
Well, I'm intrigued. So both of them have their own unique qualities,
to say the least.
I would say. So officially today, and the business end for the intro here, our two matches of the week, a match of the week, 84 and 85. Yes, I've been doing this for a bit of a while now. So 84, man. All right, so we'll just jump into it. So this is the big Sabu retirement match. Sabu versus Joey Janela, the no-rope barbed wire match that they put on WrestleMania weekend is Sabu's, you know, final farewell. It took place on April 18th, 2025 at the Pearl at the Palms in Vegas. And, dude, the timing of this was so wild. So I finally got around to watching this match the week before Sabu died. So, like, when I watched it, you know, I didn't have this dark cloud over. And it was just kind of like I got to watch it still in the mind of like, man, this is just what a wild, chaotic, insane retirement match for Sabu. So fitting in so many ways. And then, you know, hearing a little bit of the stuff around it, just a miracle that this thing even took place.
Yeah.
And then, like, after I do the illustration, after I post this match, like, 2 days later, you get the news that Sabu has died. And I'm just like, man, that is...
I would like to say first, I want to be the first one to say that Chris Bryan actually killed Sabu by drawing him. It's like, of course, it wasn't Joey Janela in GCW. It was Chris Bryan for drawing a picture.
Oh my gosh, dude. It was the weirdest feeling. And then also, like, so I spoke to Phil Schneider, you know, on the podcast the other week. I finally got to chat to him after talking about it for years now. And, you know, he did this amazing article on Sabu's last match where he did a bunch of the interviews for it, you know, before Sabu's passing. So he spoke to Brett, he spoke to Joey, and so he wrote this up, and then he finally, like, they posted it on the Yahoo Sports, like, after, and I think he finished it sort of, it was a bit of an obituary in that way. And then there were some things that, you know, like Joey and Brett said in the lead up that then, you know, once it came out, because they weren't saying this with the idea that, you know, Sabu had died, he was still alive when they gave the interviews, and then this comes out, and then, you know, Phil mentioned how bad he felt. He got, like, Joey and Brett in this hot water, with this article, because it, you know, had some stuff in there that, like, really wasn't even that stiff, to be honest. I mean, they mentioned how, like, Sabu was on, like, Kratom or whatever.
Yeah, well, they're just speaking honestly about the situation. Yeah, Kratom is, I believe, how it's pronounced, and the fact that he's like, so eventually we're here, Sabu's not even going to show up because he can't walk. And then they're like, well, they gave him some Kratom, and now he's hopping all around and he's ready to go. Like, it's basically pointing out this guy's kind of got a mess of his life and is taking drugs to get through it, and maybe pulling back the curtain about his personal life, maybe a little too much, unfortunately. But they were doing it all flippantly, but not mean, just like being honest and straightforward about the situation and why they were worried that their main event may not happen.
Yeah, and, like, it wasn't like that they were doing this to be like, all right, fuck this guy, get him on as much shit as we need to get him in that ring. We can't be losing out on this, you know, money that he's... It wasn't anything like that. Like, it was honestly, you know, them just wanting to give Sabu his moment and trying to make this happen. And, you know, when you watch the match, like, I remember watching it, I was just like, Sabu was clearly high as fuck doing this on something. I thought he was on meth or something when I watched it.
As soon as my notes, I go, as soon as I walk out, I look and I think, yeah, this guy's on Kratom. Because, dude, it fucks you up. It's all right. There's two ways to take it. If you take a little bit, it's all speedy. But if you take too much, it's like an opiate. You're like on heroin and shit. So, kind of really riding the line there, unfortunately. And I'm actually, it sounds like Sabu took enough where he could still walk around. So that's a good thing, I guess.
Man, it was a trip. And then Joey got in all this hot water for it afterwards. And I thought that shit was nasty. And I, you know, I spoke to Joey a little bit.
Oh, yeah, saying that he killed him and stuff?
Yeah, man. Like, and I could tell that, like, Joey is like a hard on his sleeve kind of dude, you know? And I messaged him and, you know, we had a little bit of a back and forth on this, and it really sounds like this, like, fan reaction and these fucking, like, Twitter people that, like, try to get over by, you know, like, persecuting people and trying to hang them out to dry and shit. Like, I think that really got to him, you know, and that really fucked him up. And
clearly,
this was a match that he did with his idol, you know, like, he wanted to give Sabu that moment. He wanted to have, like, this thing where, you know, he didn't know what Sabu would be able to do, but he wanted to do his damnedest to like, you know, give him his flowers in this moment.
100%.
And then people, like, make it into this, like, nasty kind of thing, and that so bummed me out. And, yeah, I could tell that really, like, fucked Joey up, you know, just by going through that when he was trying to do a good thing. Man, it's fucking such a weird thing now, looking at it in hindsight.
Imagine being accused of basically killing or setting up your hero to die. Like, all you want to do is help this guy have a shining moment as he's riding off in the sunset. The guy was, spoiler alert, the guy was booked to win the match. Like, he was trying to put the guy over. That was the point. Like, and it's I don't know. It's a real bummer because while Joey Janela has said some crazy shit that maybe deserved to get some heat, he had nothing to do with this. Like, he didn't shove him out the gate, or excuse me, out the curtain after getting him all hopped up on Kratom. It was his own people trying to make sure he made his payday. Yeah, it's I honestly feel bad for the guy. For no one deserves to go through that shit.
Yeah, dude. Especially, like, just, you know, when like we're saying, he's trying to do, like, a good thing, and then for it to be turned into a nasty thing, it's just such bullshit. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm interested to talk to you about it. So I think, by the sounds of it, we watched this match in different states of mind. Where
yeah.
I watched this, you know, not knowing that it was the last match that Sabu would ever have in his life. I thought there was a good chance, but, you know, at the same time, I was like, oh, you know, if someone, you know, gives him a small payday to do something else, I'm sure he'll still do it.
Yeah,
and
hell
he even
yeah.
said as such, I think, in an interview, like, after this match in between, where he's just like, oh, yeah, that wasn't what I wanted it to be, but, you know, I'll probably do another match.
Hell yeah, Sabu. Yeah, I had...
And then you watched it post...
Yesterday.
Post-passing,
or no, today.
Right?
Just now, yeah. Just today, before we recorded this, it's fresh in my mind. And yeah, I was aware of all the debacle that occurred as following with Joey getting accused and stuff. So I'm like watching this whole thing to see, you know, if there's any liberties taken at all. Like, I didn't think there would be. And everything seems pretty straightforward. The only thing that really, really sucked is when that barbed wire did not stay and hold Sabu up and he just goes flying to the outside. Like, that was the only thing I found gross, and it was just totally circumstance.
What a moment.
Oh, it was so rad.
I mean, I that was the big one where you saw it in the highlights, you know?
Yeah.
Where everyone was just like, holy shit.
It was like one of the gnarliest bumps ever.
And knowing Sabu, you know, the fact that he would do this stuff that looks like it was like a fuck up on purpose for the moment to, like, get people. I was watching it when I watched it, and I was like, I'm pretty sure he knew exactly that that barbed wire wasn't going to hold and what was going to happen would happen. But, man, that was a gnarly bump.
Oh, so Sabu knows he's going out cold here.
I didn't know that he knew he was going to get knocked out completely, but, dude, that was a gnarly bump.
Yeah, oh, nasty. It's one of the nastiest ones I've ever seen in my life. And then the first barbed wire bump when he tries to leap off the chair to do, you know, normally we do the triple jump moonsault, but he totally misses Joey, lands face first into a net of barbed wire. Again, one of the nastiest things I've seen. And I've watched Born to be Wired.
Incredible, man. Like, that was such a wild moment. That was the one that I ended up picking for the illustration of, like, of him when he still has this, like, full suit jacket on. He's wearing, like, a white suit, and he immediately
Wild.
Is just covered in blood. He's just writhing around in this barbed wire. Like, he goes in face first into the barbed wire. Man, this whole thing is just,
absolutely
like,
nasty.
An insane stunt show. You know, in a lot of ways, you're like, like, when I first watched it, I was like, I don't know whether this is absolutely terrible or one of the best things I've ever seen. You know, it's like...
It's a little column A, little column B.
Yeah.
When mentioning the suit, when he got... Sabu, after that spot, got kind of caught up in the wire, the barbed wire, and his jacket was still wrapped up, and he was trying to get out, and Joey... trying to help him out, but covered that well. It looked like he was still trying to attack him and, like, rip the jacket off. But really, we need to get this fucking thing off this guy so we can continue this fucking match.
Man. And then, like, after the other spot that you mentioned where the back of his head, like, smashes on that concrete
and
knocked out cold, we then get this tremendous classic Sandman entrance that feels like it goes for about 10 years while he's clearly covering for him.
First, the Kogars come out, and they just apparently beat up everybody, including throwing Fonzie through a barbed wire door. But then you have the best part about the Sandman entrance is they all of a sudden, boom, hit the crowd real quick where you think Sandman's going to be standing there right then. But nah. He takes a few minutes to show up as the music plays, and then he takes literally, as Chris said, 10 minutes to make a save. It was fucking incredible.
It was amazing. And then somehow, after this incredible delay, Sabu somehow comes back. Like Joey mentions in the amazing Yahoo Sports article that like he couldn't believe it. He was pretty sure this match was over, and then he came back from like the resurrection of blood. Who knows how what happened, but he came back somehow, got through the rest of this match with some gnarly chair shots to Joey. Joey takes like 5 really, really hard chair shots to the head.
Yeah, it was nasty. And one thing about the Sandman thing, when at one point, he literally can't figure out how to get down. It's almost like in Spinal Tap when they start walking to the fucking the stage and they get lost backstage. Have you seen that shit? It's so fucking funny. That's what Sandman was doing. He's like, where the hell am I? What the fuck?
Yeah, how do I get from this bit of the crowd to like the actual ring? Like you just... slowly stumbling around.
But yeah, the chair shots were nasty. The Joey getting spiked on his head with the DDT on the chair was nasty. Him landing in the barbed wire net and on his asshole and screaming bloody murder was hilarious. Oh my god.
Man, and then like...
And then the hugs and the handshakes. It's so bizarre.
It was like, I honestly thought the Arabian face buster that he gave him to finish it off was pretty sick. And when you hear about, you know, his like legs not even working and his knee locking up, you know, beforehand, even the idea of him being able to get up enough to do that Arabian face buster was pretty wild. And then, yeah, just a beautiful moment at the end in the post-match of him and Joey posing together. And I thought it was actually quite lovely in the weirdest freak show kind of way. Okay, we're back after a little technical snafu there.
Oh, podcasting. It's so easy to do.
Oh, man, so easy. I can understand why there's people that only do it if they could be in the same room as someone.
Oh, yeah, completely. Like, oh, yeah, we're talking from two different hemispheres. This is a totally reasonable thing to do. Is that correct? Am I speaking on my ass? Did I use hemisphere correctly?
No, you are. It's true.
Oh, sweet.
Our toilets flush different ways.
That is wild. I'm going to call you to find out if that's true. Hello. The episode of The Simpsons is the best.
Busy place to collect call.
Yeah. Legitimately, that's my favorite episode of The Simpsons when they go to Australia. And my favorite joke is when they get the bullfrogs everywhere. And the guy's like, bullfrogs? Well, that's a peculiar name. I would have called them chazwazzers.
That's incredible.
Fucking kills me, dude. Oh, they're totally taking the piss out of you Australians, huh?
Hey, they got it pretty well right. I'm sure our Prime Minister in the lake with the tube is pretty accurate.
There you go. All right, well, let's get back to this nonsense of a match. Talking about Sandman doing the Spinal Tap bit. Then he comes out with these one-armed cane shots all over the place. Like, not even taking time to really swing it at all. Love it. Sandman getting that easy payday.
It was just perfect in every way. I would have changed to this. Yes.
No, sir. Wearing a shirt with his own face on, like an all-over print Sandman shirt. Fucking guy, he rules.
Tremendous. Like I said, it was just a beautiful disaster of a match. And it adds a bit of a weird, you know, complication sort of watching it now. But
I thought they were about to kiss at that one point. When they were hugging, I thought they were about to kiss.
It was so weird. Like,
these men are going to kiss.
Man, I still don't really have words for it, but I'm glad we got to share discussing the weird beauty of this thing.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that one of his nicknames, like when he first came out and Dave Prazak goes, the death-defying Sabu, and I, in my head I go, ooh, not so quick, Dave.
Oh, man. Hey, technically, he did in this match, okay?
Fair. Oh, I knew that was a bit off color, but I couldn't resist saying that joke.
Oh, man. This is just a bizarre and fascinating thing to watch that really stretches the limits of professional wrestling, but, you know, there's something to it, man.
I would be remiss if I did not mention how awesome Emil looked in his Kurt Angle tracksuit. So, Team Angle all the way. Way to go, Emil.
And the great moment between him and Sabu,
Emil, excuse me,
at the start.
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, get off me, man.
He's like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah. Like they said, for whatever reason, don't let Sabu have the microphone.
Probably rightfully so, man.
Yeah.
All right. So after that beautiful disaster of a match, we move on to a match that also kind of involves Sabu. I mean, it does. It's Sabu,
yeah, 100%.
With the accompanying the Sheik for a match that I adore, that I believe is another last ever. I think this is the last time we ever got Terry Funk wrestling the Sheik, the original Sheik. So this one took place on May 5th, 1994 at FMW's big 5th anniversary show at famed Kawasaki Stadium. Just a wild match. This, I believe, was a no pinfalls match. You could only win by being the last man standing. But, man.
That's what it appeared to be.
This is just one of the, and again, one of the wildest things I've ever seen. This match goes for like 5 minutes, but they get a lot done in that 5 minutes. This is Terry Funk versus the Sheik, last time ever, and it was wonderful in every way.
Dude, I loved every minute of this, like from beginning to the end. I'm just the whole time, I'm like, people paid to go watch this thing, and then this all insanity happened. Like, so good. From the very beginning, Terry coming out, and then Sheik coming out, and his music playing forever, and Terry not waiting for him to come out there, starts attacking him and flinging shit at him, and
after
fans are terrified. Oh, yeah, he totally was up that trestle, like, on the side of it, yeah, like, for no reason, just like, I need to see where the fucking Sheik is, there he is, I'm gonna throw shit at him, I'm getting you, Sheik,
you
it was so good, dude, legitimately, it was the best, and, like, total chaos, his music, Sheik's music kept playing until they actually started punching each other. It was fucking incredible.
What,
dude,
a tremendous musical choice. The most generic, like, Arabian music you've ever
heard. Oh, it was so good. And, right away, when they actually started interacting, like, the first thing is Terry wraps his chair around Sheik's head and just starts beating the shit out of him. Like I said, I loved everything about this from start to end, dude. Did a rooster just crow? You are heel people. Oh, man. Take two. Take two. Or is this take five? I'm not sure at this point.
Who knows? This has been cursed is what this has been. But anyway, we're here to finish this up again. Let's pretend that we haven't already had this last bit of the conversation. But we maybe it'll, I don't know, maybe there'll be something fascinating about it. I'm not sure. But so we started talking about the tremendous Terry Funk Sheik match. We got up to the incredible entrance. I think we were just very excited about it. And then the audio stopped recording. We thought it was, but we're going to do it again, guys.
Yeah, let's take another swing at this. So, as I mentioned previously, no, I'm not going to do that every time. So, this match starts out with Sheik, or Terry coming out first, of course, his grand entrance, looking cool as hell, waiting for Sheik to come out. He climbs this lighting trestle, is just yelling the man to come, which is amazing. But then my favorite part, and not necessarily my favorite part, but just...
On this lighting trestle, just hanging off of it, having climbed off it for who knows what reason, other than I assume to get a bird's eye look at the situation, just shouting out into the sea of humanity, Sheik!
Yes, yes, see, over yonder comes, which I find adorable, an old man who's very violent, and his little nephew, who seems so, looking up to his uncle in such awe, just following him out through this crowd of people who are all scared for their lives because two wild men have just, you know, come into their vicinity, and who knows what's going to happen.
They also have fire being, like, brought dangerously close to them. The amount of health and safety standards in this match that, man, I love it so much.
It's, and then Terry starts throwing shit. He's throwing chairs. And he's not even caring about the fans that are around. So they themselves are beyond terrified and are fleeing like a Godzilla movie. They're just running away. Oh, wait, that was probably not very appropriate. I didn't mean it that way. I meant it the monster's way. So don't cancel me.
I feel like watching this, it's like there's such a thing where wrestling is so sanitized and safe. You know, these days we don't want lawsuits. You know, most of the big wrestling companies are run by billionaires who you know don't want these negative things to be a thing. So everything's so pre-rehearsed. If something goes into the crowd, they generally have to pre-work it out with security and have meetings, and there's bureaucracy and red tape and all these things. They're probably fake fans that are in the area who are plants where the wrestlers are going to brawl
or land on.
Yeah, this, on the other hand, my friend, this is about as far away as you can get from the current land of sanitized, safe wrestling.
Just spontaneously, Terry's like, you know what? This man's coming at me. I'm just going to throw chairs at him. I'm going to throw pieces of wood at him. I'm going to throw what looks like a guardrail at him. And what the funny thing is, Sheik, this doesn't stop him at all. He still keeps coming. He just is, he's dead set on murdering Terry Funk.
Man. It is just, like, the most magical time. Like, you could just throw who knows what into the crowd, probably hit people in the head, and it's okay.
And yeah, people would be stoked. They'd be all like, oh, dude, I got hit by the chair during Terry and Sheik match. Like, I was at, I think it was a Jersey show. It was a match between Mance Warner and Nick Gage, and at one point, a door gets smashed over the head by Nick Gage, over Nick Gage's head by Mance Warner. A piece of door flew in the audience, Chris, landed on the very top of my head and cut me open. I started bleeding, and you know what? I wasn't trying to sue these fuckers. I was like, I got bloody during the wrestling match. Like, awesome. Also,
man, so hang on, it does make me happy to hear that there are other places in wrestling in 2020, you know, whatever, that this does still happen.
I think it was 2023 potentially, or 22, I don't know, but it was an amazing experience. I actually maintain possession of this piece of door to this day. One day I'll have to go bring it up to Mance or Gage and have them sign it. Also, just a quick aside, the match that I saw right before that was Scott Steiner versus Hornswoggle. Oh my fucking god.
Man.
So good. So we were going on about the entrance. This match on YouTube, the video is like less than 10 minutes long. They didn't actually start legitimately fighting until 4 minutes. And the entire time Sheik was coming to the ring, before they started interacting, Sheik's music played for like at least 2 minutes straight. And it reminded me of New Jack, and I loved everything about it.
New Jack, but like weird, generic Lawrence of Arabia music.
Oh, yeah. Only New Jack in the way that it kept playing for way longer than it possibly should.
It was quite pleasant, though. I personally am all for it.
Yeah, the fans seem to be enjoying it. Like, legitimately, I wish I was alive. I realized after you mentioned the date of the show that I was 14, completely unaware that this particular wrestling company even existed, let alone that they were doing this kind of banana shit, exploding barbed wire matches. Fuck. I wish 14-year-old me would have been exposed to this, because I would have been a totally different individual at this point.
Man, it's just, I remember my first time, like, that was really my gateway into, you know, wrestling, tape trading and downloading wrestling and shit, and like, getting on LimeWire back in the day to download, you know, whatever fucking Onita versus Hayabusa exploding cage death match that I could find, that I would probably be downloading for a good 4 days to get, you know, this single, like, 35 megabyte real video.
Yeah, you start, you like, start it. Yo, it was real time. But you start it, go, leave, come home, hoping it would be done. Nope, another day. So ridiculous.
Man, the amount of viruses I probably put on my parents' computer to download Onita matches. People don't understand the challenges of us back in the day, my friend.
Quick, another aside. Hayabusa you mentioned. What do you think about this new Hayabusa? The whole gimmick is he's actually not a new Hayabusa. It's the same Hayabusa. And the guy wrestles exactly like the motherfucker. Like, did you see the tope pop up?
Oh, man. Like, uncanny how similar it was.
It's like, how is that?
Everything he does.
Yeah. Anyways, incredible. That guy, I hope he has a long career. I hope he's careful, because we don't want that lineage to follow to the same degree. You know what I mean?
I just love the gimmick so much. That
it's such like a badass thing.
That it's a different, like, human vessel.
Yep.
But it is still the same spirit of Hayabusa. And, like, everyone else is on board with it. You know, like, Tanaka's on board with it. What's his name? Eiji Izaki, like, original Hayabusa. His family are on board with it. That Bahu Brett dude, the obsessive FMW fan that he always writes things, yeah. He's on board with it. So once you got him, you're fine.
That is hilarious. I actually went down a rabbit hole the other day, and I was looking at all the different variations of Hayabusa and how well they did or did not get over. It was actually quite a hilarious read. Have you seen that article?
No, I haven't.
Oh yeah, it's breaking down like every single version. It's pretty entertaining, actually.
Oh, I do. I am quite familiar
like
with like
the giant Hayabusa at some point.
Oh yeah. The I think it wasn't Tenryu like one of the Hayabusa.
I think so. Oh, anyways. So yeah, when these guys finally start fighting, it immediately starts out with Terry wrapping a chair around Sheik's head, causing him to bloody up, and Terry, his first thought is, I'm going to chew on this man's bloody forehead. And you know, you got to love him for that. That's the kind of spontaneity that only comes from Terry Funk.
Dude, I don't know what it was, whether it was like just the fragile state of the scar tissue Sheik's head, but immediately he is bleeding, and Terry, like a consummate professional that he is biting that. He has got the blood in his mouth, probably all sorts of hepatitis and who knows what. This is what, you know, the real pros. That's how you deal with it.
From hepatitis A to Z, as you guys would say.
Man, but that was the moment I chose for the illustration in question.
This beautiful moment of
Terry just hogging into that forehead scar tissue meat. And the fact that it's like he's bleeding so fast and we're already at this state when the match is like, I guess technically like 2 seconds in, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not in the ring yet.
It's at 4 minutes when they actually get in the ring. And yeah, I have to tell all that is just all kinds of shenanigans that are amazing and fun to watch. And then when Terry actually tries to get in the ring, he's quickly stopped by, I believe, a fork to the head repeatedly, which, fuck it, what a great weapon. Who did it first? It was a Sheik or Abdullah? Sheik, right?
I'm not sure on this because Abby was obviously known for the fork, but I think Sheik did it first, but Sheik was known for the pencil. I don't know whether like Sheik did it first with the pencil and Abby did it first with the fork, or whether Sheik did the fork before we know about.
It's like a whole chicken and the egg scenario.
Yeah, this was a real tremendous forking.
Forked the shit out of him.
He really did. And I reckon if I had to say my favorite wrestling foreign object, I reckon it's a fork. Yeah.
That's pretty strong. I might have to go with a bicycle.
Ooh.
It's a bicycle. He's being a bicycle.
A bicycle, Tony. A bicycle.
That's so fucking funny. Actually, there's another funny bit when Minoru Suzuki, I think it might be DDT, where he rides out with on a bike that has like a thing on the front and he runs into somebody's chest. It's so good. Suzuki, so his comedy is so understated. You gotta love him.
Tremendous. Yeah, man. I mean, a special mention to the kitchen sink. I was always a big fan of that when the
actual legitimately
kitchen sink would come into play.
That's so funny. But yeah, Sheik had a garrote or some sort of wire that he choked Terry out with for a while. And yeah, that's nasty work. That's like one of the most violent things ever. And me personally, I've had some terrible experience with strangulation, so it's a little triggering. But yeah, what a nasty spot. Terry was like swinging crazy. I just acted it all out for Chris's entertainment. But yeah, fucking A, man. Violent as hell.
One day we'll have the video version of this podcast. People will be able to appreciate
it. I do a lot of act them outs, guys. A lot of act them outs.
Oh, yeah. That fork bit was like, I think a big part of this is, like, you know, Sheik is quite old in this match. I don't know, like 65, something like this, 66. Terry is not a spring chicken in this either. Probably either early 50s or at the very least late 40s. And I think Sheik is beyond the point of being able to take what one would say is a bump in wrestling terms at this stage. But Terry, like, they put together something that is just a masterpiece in, like, all right, we're still going to do some cool shit and have a very memorable match. And they sure as heck did.
And Sheik is, wow, there's beautiful birds in the background. I fucking love it. Sheik is a testament that even at an old, out of shape, that doesn't mean you can't be intimidating and you can't be intimidating and badass. The guy is scary as fuck walking out there. Like, people are legitimately fleeing. Like, they're not just like, oh, let's move out of the way because the wrestler's coming. They're like, Sheik is scary. He might fork us. Let's get the fuck out of the way.
Man, I just have I'm such a fan of, like, wrestling oddities. You know, like, people that just don't quite look like humans. Like, there's some sort of...
Abby, as we mentioned previously.
And that's the exact same thing that I felt like when I first saw Abby. Because, you know, when I first saw Abdullah the Butcher, it wasn't like the Abdullah the Butcher from his, like, prime, or, like, from his World Championship wrestling days in Australia, or from, like, his stuff in the 70s in Japan. No, first time I really ever saw Abdullah the Butcher was in, like, 2003 Ring of Honor, when he was, like, a stumbling old man. But he was still scary as shit. And I had never seen someone, like, I think he was even using a plastic fork at that stage, but it still looked absolutely terrifying. And this has the exact same vibe. In a wonderful
with a plastic fork, more dangerous. It could break off. You get a piece embedded in your forehead, man. He's thinking.
Yeah.
But honestly, dude, like, the last recording we did of this particular segment, I mentioned about repeatedly how much I love this from top to bottom. This is one of the most entertaining things you could watch ever, even as a non-wrestling fan. Like, it is like a movie monster thing with actual city folk running away. It's like tremendous.
Dude, I remember, like, being so excited to play this in front of a bar full of some suspecting, most unsuspecting people.
Normies. Hey, what the hell is this, cunt?
Do not even know what professional wrestling is to start with.
I used to be way better at that accent.
It was very good. It's good, good. I appreciated it. But yeah, like, and let alone that, but now they're watching this match with these two old men that are just fucking one another up. There's blood. There's, you know, like, I think it's beyond the point of being like, are you using blood capsules? You know, it's like,
no,
you
can this is clearly not.
There are no blood capsules here. And
a man was legitimately set on fire in front of them, Chris. Like, how did they respond to a man legitimately being set on fire?
That was the best part. I remember, like, I was at the bar, because thankfully when I do these events, the Scratch very graciously cover my bar tab for the evening.
Nice.
So I was going up for another beverage at this moment. I was talking to the
I'm sure you don't take advantage of that too badly, do you?
Oh, I have to watch myself, dude. I don't want to be like a stumbling mess by the end of it. I don't want to do like a
live
Q&A, but you could probably tell I sound like I'm pretty buzzed. No, I remember being at the bar, like, getting another drink and talking to the bar staff about, like, the proceedings, and they were just, like, similar, like, I did not know this is what a professional wrestling could be, but I'm here for it. And in that moment, we're just talking about the oddity of this, like, freaky looking fella that is the Sheik, wrestling Terry Funk. There's blood, there's everything, they're just the general vibes, you know. And then while I'm talking to him, I was like, oh, and now he's on fire. That's the moment when the Sheik lights Terry Funk's leg and boot on fire. And then Terry does the greatest sell job I've ever seen, stumbling, running into the crowd, which I think we need to give attention to. He's running into the crowd while legitimately having his knee on fire. And the greatest stumbling sell job, yelling, Sheik, Sheik, while he's burning.
Man.
And this was WWE, and the production truck is like, what is he doing? He's running into the crowd. Get him out of there. But no, Terry Funk's like, ah, this is the best idea. And then he finally gets put out. Like somebody from one of the Young Boys or something comes up with a bottle of Perrier, like a blue bottle of water, and just douses on his leg and puts him out. Like, no, there was no fire extinguishers ringside just in case something got set on fire. Nah, this is straight up just a bottle of water.
Dude, no precautions taken, no, like, no. Just, I'm so fascinated as to how this came about. I wonder whether this was part of the conceptual stage of this match, of like, all right, probably not going to be able to do that much wrestling, but I reckon a great high spot would be, if you want to light me on fire.
Yeah, it's like, people might question if wrestling is legitimate, that there is nothing kayfabe about a man being set on fire, Christopher. Like, this is legit. And then the best part is, after all that happens, Terry, like the beaten warrior, the cowboy who was set on fire but still is not going to stop fighting, comes back limping, holding his pants up.
Might have his tights melted his thigh, as you were mentioning earlier.
Screaming out Sheik like a madman. Sheik! Sheik! You have to love Terry Funk. Like, I've always said that Eddie Guerrero was my favorite wrestler, and I will still say that to this day, but Terry Funk is such a close second. I know you disagree, but Funk...
I have all of the flowers for Eddie Guerrero.
Okay.
I love one of those original WCW Eddie Guerrero was my favorite wrestler t-shirts. I always thought that was one of the coolest wrestling t-shirts ever.
Yeah, got me one of those.
As my tastes have changed over the years, it definitely has become Terry.
He's brilliant. He's like a true artist. He's funny. He's tough as fuck. He, even when he's old, he'll do the craziest shit ever. Like, there's no stopping this man, or there was no stopping this man. Terry Funk is the shiz, bar none. And I'll sing his praises to the rooftops.
Man. Well, you were happy to know on this night of this wrestling club, I also played an Eddie Guerrero match. The one in question was that great one against DDP, where he broke out that really sick variation of the diamond cutter out of the powerbomb position.
Oh, Eddie, like, just says, so I have an idea. Like, they just pull it off. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, DDP's and also, like, there's no way I'm going to be able to catch you, like, on that. And Eddie's just like,
Trust me. Yeah. There actually is a Terry Funk and Eddie Guerrero match out there, which, yeah, it's pretty fucking good.
Eddie was like an enhancement talent for the purpose of the match, but Terry gives him so much.
Yeah. Very, very surprising. I legitimately thought it was just going to be Terry beating the shit out of him, but yeah, no, it's quite an enjoyable match.
So good. But yeah, this match really shows all of the different Terrys, you know, from the vicious... Terry, who is chomping down on Sheik's forehead as we start in resuming their feud of gosh knows however many years, to the him like we're saying, some of the greatest Terry selling in the history of the world, and then just these weird moments of brevity of like his tremendous, like, just hilarious weird Terry Funk moments. It's in a lot of ways, I'd say, a one-man show, but I also feel like the Sheik in this is absolutely tremendous, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the more you watch all of the different little weird eras of the Terry's career and his evolving career, like, he was always crazy. I don't think there's a single moment, even if you watch his, like, most technical stuff you could possibly find in the 70s, he was still crazy.
He's wild. He, like, when he just, like, throws his fist up and he's ready to, like, he literally is a man who puts up his dukes. Like, this classic old sense of it. Yeah. He's fucking rad.
This whole thing. Perfect.
And then this match has a beautiful finish. The ending is amazing.
So,
like,
after he's coming back from being on fire.
Go ahead.
From being on fire, yes. Selling this, like, leg. He's, like, torn at all of the gear up, and his leg is looking very much in less than a great state. But he's coming back to the fight like the aging gunslinger that he is. Comes back to the ring.
Yes.
Sheik goes to light him on fire again with the fire gimmick, and then Terry, I thought he punches it, but you said he, like, throws something and there's an explosion of fire and it goes into Sheik's
face. He was holding something. I'm not sure what it was, but yeah, it hit the fire stick. Everything went crazy. Sheik's face is burning, and then the what happened right after that? I forget. Honestly, we talked about it earlier, and I forget.
I think that's we get into like the shit goes down, and then we go into the you know,
they administer the 10 count.
Seems like it's going to be a double count out, or both of them are going to be down for the 10, and then they're both sort of really getting to their feet.
Something must have happened to Terry between the interim, but I don't know. I don't remember
Terry
what it
just
was.
Miraculously gets to his feet, uses the rope to pull himself up right in that last moment, and man, so perfect.
It was so perfect, picture perfect, because he literally was hanging, trying to get up at 9, was halfway up, fell down, and then was able to pop up instantly right before the 10. It was picture perfect finish.
And then, you know, Shit gets up shortly thereafter. So he clearly, as a 66-year-old man, needs to protect himself to make sure he stays over for that next match, brother.
He
is off.
He's got another payday
so
coming.
So then the crowd kind of like boos it, because they're like, oh, boo, we want to see it keep going. That's the finish. Fuck you. And then Terry, I don't know if this is a little thing that he just did on the fly as well, but Terry's like, all right, I can save this. Sabu comes in. Terry like nails him. And then without thinking, he goes up to the top rope and does the most picture perfect Terry Funk moonsault that I've ever seen in my life. Like, lands it absolutely perfect as well. Sends everyone.
This laying in this crazy match too. Yeah, yeah. And that after shaking them tries to burn Terry some more. That after that, he after the moonsault, he tries to set him on fire again. So a great thing overall. And then my favorite bit, legitimately, is after that Terry's like stumbling around and like I maybe looking for Sheik.
Both old men bleeding all over the place, stumbling into the crowd, trying to find one another.
Beautiful. And then Terry stumbles over the guardrail and tumbles over, lands head first, and stays in a handstand, I'd say for a good 3 seconds, and then falls off. But he wasn't done there, Chris. He wasn't done there. What did Terry do now?
No, he finally makes his way up, still swinging at the air, like bumping, falling over whatever chairs, like just in the most beautiful Terryisms that you've ever seen. And then he for whatever reason, decides he has to climb the thing next to the dugout, the caging that's.
I believe it's called a backstop.
A backstop. Oh, we're not as in on our baseball over here.
Yeah, you're more into your rugby, right? Or didgeridoo professional fighters, right?
The only sport I know, my friend, is Kings, and that is professional.
Pro wrestling, all right.
so we've the closing moments is Terry, for whatever reason, scaling this back thing that you just mentioned. And the crowd just giving a wonderful ovation for having done so. And,
they loved it.
This is the end of this piece of living, breathing art that is this tremendous match.
I absolutely loved top to bottom, as mentioned very many times on the previous recording. And now I will say it once again. I loved every bit of this, Chris.
I did as well. The more I watched it, the more I adored it. And I am so happy to get to share this.
Thank you.
To rave
Thank
on
you.
Like a madman with you about. This is just the best. I think this is the new match where people say, what do you show to someone to tell them, you know, if they've never seen professional wrestling before? In the past, I might have said that, that Kenta Ricky Marvin match. Or for a long time there, I was always going to say, I think Samoa Joe Necro Butcher was one of my favorites that I would show to the normies. But I think this is.
I never show normal people wrestling because I just would be too annoyed if they get annoyed by it. But I like to show them WLC.
Hornswoggle and El Torito.
Yeah, it legitimately is an awesome match. They even had the tiny announce team. It's actually way better than it deserves to be. And I'm not even kidding.
I do have very fond memories of that one.
Quite good. Quite good.
Whatever it is.
Quite good.
I feel like you have to show people something that it's a bit more interesting fair
than
professional wrestling. And I feel this most definitely is.
Yeah, 100%. This is one of the best things I've ever seen ever. So, and I've seen a lot of things. I once saw a naked woman, and this might be better. That was a lie. Well, that was high praise. What the fuck am I saying? Terry Funk, I'm sorry, friend. You're not better than naked ladies. You know
what? I'm gonna say, I mean, you know, tits or Terry's
I just
butt.
Said it again. I just started saying it again, and I feel like I might need to recant a second time. Damn it, Terry!
Man, this was everything, and I highly recommend everyone who hasn't seen it go out of your way to do so. It is a brief. It's probably the greatest 5 minute like experience of professional wrestling that I have ever witnessed. And I just feel it's a testament to so much of the weird and wonderfulness that is really, keeps me loving professional wrestling after watching it for all these years.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm so glad. I mentioned earlier how I wish I'd saw this when I was younger because I could have enjoyed it so much sooner. But I think I could appreciate it so much more now. Back then, I was just like, oh, that was wild. Now I just feel like enjoy all the different moments and Terry doing his thing and noticing Sheik not bumping but still getting over real big as a badass. And oh, there's so many fine points to this match that you can only enjoy like fine wine as an aged individual.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I'm most of all happy that I got to share it with you, my friend. Thanks, pal. What an excellent match for your big return to the podcast.
Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to be here. I had to have it done. Looked at my friend's last match and was like, too long. Too long. We must chat.
Yes, so happy we got to rekindle this, and let's not leave it that long for the next time. I'll keep you in mind when I continue to get caught up on this match of the week gimmick.
I insist. I insist.
But love having you on the show. Thanks for the chat, bud. Where can the people find you? How can the people buy the things from you? Your t-shirts.
Yes, indeed. T-shirts. Please purchase some wares from me. I have a little t-shirt shop that also has hats and other items called pentagonzo.com. That's Penta, P-E-N-T-A, Gonzo, like the guy, the little Muppet, G-O-N-Z-O, and the porn style, .com. Pentagonzo.com. Don't put in the porn style and all that other stuff. Pentagonzo.com. And then also
Hunter S. Thompson thing's got to be a good
show. Yeah, Gonzo Journalism. Right? Sure. Yeah. Anyway, then finally, follow me on social media platforms such as X, Instagram, Blue Sky, and all that jazz. I am at James Vanderbeek. I'm also Jamie Tate on Facebook if you want to follow me. They pay me now, so please like my memes on there too. And then, yeah, I work for a little wrestling company out of Tacoma, Washington. I do commentary. We are on IWTV. You can listen to me talk about funny wrestling, do my entrance to David Bowie, drinking beer, saying hello. And yeah, it's really entertaining, really silly. If you like wrestling, but you also have a comedy love, you will enjoy SOS Pro Wrestling.
A amazing time. If you are in the area, I highly recommend you check out
Please.
The greatest island party professional wrestling show there ever was.
Number one. The only one, but still number one.
Tremendous, friend. Thanks again. I'll talk to you soon.
No problem. And actually, you know what? I think this recording was actually better than the original one. I'm glad we had to start over so many times.
Love you, dude. Lost the magic? If anything, it got better.
That's what I'm saying. This was an improvement. I was really phoning it in before. Anyway, later, dude. Love you.
You too, bud. All right, man. We can finally got to the end of that episode. Oh my gosh, I forgot how many times we had to start that thing, and then editing that together was frankly a nightmare. But this is what I do for this podcast. I hope you enjoyed. I clearly enjoyed that. Thank you, Jeremy, Uncle James Vanderbeek. He's a funny guy, that Jeremy. Appreciate him. Again, too long. All right, well, I think that's about it for this episode. I'd like to say a big thank you to the guys at Social Suplex for allowing me to do this thing. Socialsuplex.com, the home to this podcast, as well as a bunch of other rad wrestling podcasts, from Keeping It Strong Style, One Nation Radio, the Trish and Sarah podcast, Imps WWE Adventure, All Things Elite, the AEW Match Recommendation podcast, Tunnel Talk, Easy for me to say. And all of the things. So thank you, Social Suplex, for keeping the lights on here. Thank you to everyone out there who you know, supports this thing, who makes purchases, who buys my art, who buys prints of our matches of the week that we just discussed, who's bought my book, who, you know, all of the things. I appreciate you guys. Even I know it's tough these days, even if you're just, you know, following and liking and saying encouraging things on the Instagram and sending me a nice message here and there. I appreciate you guys very much too. Don't ever think that your support goes unnoticed. As a, you know, totally independent art guy who specializes in something so niche as wrestling art, every bit is noticed and appreciated. So heartfelt thank you. ChrisThings.com.au is the place if anyone else would like to go and take a little gander or possibly buy some things. And I also do commissions. But I think that's about it for this episode. I might say a little thing. Some of the audio there in the interview portion of today was clearly a little bit on the dodgy side. As I said, technical issues. But, you know, I think next week I'm gonna have these fixed up. Or I'm at least going to aim to. All right. Thanks, guys. I hope you have an excellent week. And I will see you next time. Bye.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.